mentor once told me that the pessimist is the ultimate reality creator.
Welcome to the show that the fact checkers warned you about. The one that debunks the mainstream narrative and gives you high signal, actionable content that helps you navigate the clown world. It's Bomb Thrower TV with your host, Mark Jeftovic.
Hey everybody, how you doing? It's been a while since I've done an episode of Bomb Thrower TV. It's a very special one today. I'm excited for it. And you're probably going to have one of two reactions when I tell you about our guest today, who is Ryu Shinohara, who is an author who I've been following and my wife and I have been following for a couple of years now. I have pretty well all of his books. I've read them all. I just ordered the latest one, Manifesting with Intention. And so the one of the two reactions you might be having could be, one, why am I bringing Ryu Shinohara on Bomb Thrower TV, which is like, you know, Bitcoin maximalism, laser eyes, contrarian economics, sort of sovereign individual. And the second reaction could be, who is Ryu Shinohara? Because he's a little outside of our circles and you may not have heard of him. So we'll get to why I brought him down, brought him on a little later. But let's start with giving us the rundown on who you are and what you do. And we can take it from there. So welcome to Bomb Thrower TV.
Cool. Thank you, Mark, for the introduction. So my name is Ryu Shinohara. I mean, that's usually what people know me as. That's my pen name for the books and all the emails that I write and the content that I create online. My real name is Mateus. I was born in Brazil, grew up in Miami, and now I write books for a living, create content, and help people live their best lives through teachings related to the law of attraction, neuroscience, positive thinking, all sorts of things related to that. And recently I've been diving really deep into the idea of focus and having more intention when it comes to creating your best life and manifesting the life that you want. And in relation to probably your audience is probably attracting more abundance, being more receptive to abundance, to financial freedom, to all of that stuff, which is something that we can definitely talk about as well, is the positive thinking aspects related to money. So cool.
Right. And so when people hear the phrase law of attraction, I'm not one of them, but you know, their eyes may glaze over, they may kind of go new age woo woo. And I've seen it even as a lifelong, or maybe throughout my adulthood, sort of adherent to this sort of philosophy, which I sort of think of, you know, the power of positive mental attitude. I resonate a lot with the New Thought sort of writers of like the late 1900s and beyond. But there's a lot of like almost lowest common denominator cartoonish variations of law of attraction that might sort of give people, you know, the heebie-jeebies a bit. How would you sort of get to the essence of it and differentiate it from the sort of like, you know, turn that frown upside down and everything will be okay kind of cartoonish lowest common denominator?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you mentioned the idea that, you know, the law of attraction isn't anything new, right? It's been around for a very long time. Napoleon Hill, I think, first touched on it, you know, in the early 30s, right? 1930s. He actually wrote the book, and then it only got published like a few years later because of the backlash that it was going to get from the press. But yeah, man, the law of attraction has gone through many different shifts in perspective over the years. And that has led to a lot of new ideas that sometimes might move away from the essence of what it all means, right? Of the true core teachings of it all. And so people start getting a little bit more gimmicky with the approach, gimmicky with the techniques. They get fancy with what you need to do and all of these meditations and vision boards and affirmations and all of this stuff. And they kind of forget what the core essence of it is, which is basically just resonating energetically with the reality that you want to attract into your life. And, you know, Mark, the last few years, you know, as I've written all of these books and studied all of this stuff, I've realized that all of this goal achievement stuff, manifestation, productivity, all of it really comes down to one core principle. And that's the principle of where attention goes, energy flows. And if you can master just that one principle and you know where you're putting your energy and where you're putting your attention, then all of the things that you want to attract into your life, all of the realities that you want to grow and expand, start to become a reality when you focus on that one core principle. And from there, you can derive the right techniques and the right tactics that match with your lifestyle, or maybe what comes naturally to you, or what your strengths are, for example. And so that's sort of the way that I like to think about it.
Yeah, I mean, a long time ago, I think after I watched that movie, The Secret, and I wrote on a completely different blog that I actually did under a pen name myself called, I wrote a post called The Secret Behind the Secret. And I distilled it all down to your biases affect your outcomes, right? Like, that's it. It's like what your head is geared towards is what's going to perpetually sort of happen to you over and over again in your life. And where I've come to lately is this idea that, well, I'll back it up a little bit. So my main gig is I run a web services company. Everybody watching this probably knows it, Easy DNS. But then over the past couple of years, I launched Bomb Thrower Media, started writing about, you know, economics, finance, Bitcoin, that sort of thing. And that came about because under the lockdowns during COVID, I kind of went into a negative spiral, right? I was so angry at the lockdowns. I was so angry at the policy mismanagement of how they were trying to, you know, control this uncontrollable situation, that I was really circling into despondency. And my wife, actually, a lot of credit for this, said, you know, you have to get a grip on yourself. And I ended up, long story short, I ended up taking the last master class that Bob Proctor ever taught before he passed away. And then I worked with Arash Visugi, one of his proteges. And that broke me out of that cycle of negativity and got me into this framework of, like, what's going on in the world? There's nothing I can control about that. I can only, I mean, you said this literally yourself. I have it down here in my notes somewhere, but you cannot change reality. You can only respond to it. This is what creates your reality, right? It's a bit of a paradox, but there it is. And where I sort of wound up at the end of it, if, you know, the sort of objective side of me said, isn't this all brainwashing? Aren't you just brainwashing yourself? And I finally got to a point, it was a realization where I thought, it is all brainwashing. We're all being brainwashed by something, whether it's CNN that's on, you know, you're hanging out in the bar and CNN is on 24/7, you're being brainwashed by that, or you're reading the papers, or you're listening to Klaus Schwab. Or you can brainwash yourself or choose what you want to be brainwashed with. And that's basically your one sort of act of free will. So.
Yeah, totally. I totally agree with that. A mentor once told me that the pessimist is the ultimate reality creator.
Because I love that.
Because they're constantly focusing and giving attention to the negative, to the bad things that are happening, to why it's not going to work out, to why they're not worthy enough, to all of the things that are basically blocking them from creating the life that they want. And so the whole idea of my teachings and sort of the things that I try and implement in the books is the whole idea of just shifting your mindset so that you can give more energy to the right thoughts, give your energy to the right intentions. And in doing that, you start to take new actions and start feeling more positive emotions, and that sort of ends up creating a spiral effect and momentum that builds up that attitude where everything you do starts to work out effortlessly and people start living this life where it's very easy to live, where things just start to work out positively versus negatively, kind of like how the pessimist is, which is like the idea that, oh, I have terrible luck. Oh, the economy is terrible. I can't work. I can't make this work right now. Oh, you know, crypto is down. It'll never go up or anything like that. Sort of having that always that negative mentality that always leads them down the path of giving energy to that reality and ending up living that exact reality that they perpetuate in their mind.
I love that. I love that expression. You know, I don't advertise this a lot, but I don't make a secret of it either. But I have been in recovery for 25 years now. And what I tell newcomers to recovery, if they have, you know, any kind of substance abuse, or in my case, alcoholism, I always tell them that the fundamental job of recovery is to convert yourself from a pessimist into an optimist. Because at the heart, in my mind, of a lot of these addictions and neuroses is a pessimism, a fundamental pessimism. We live in a world where it's very easy to be negative and pessimistic. I mean, it's, you kind of look at it and you just think, you know, the odds are, you know, you're just inundated with media and popular culture of like how hopeless everything is. And you really have to look for the positive messages, even really, you know, scientific, rationalistic optimism is hard to find, but it is out there, right? There's the Rational Optimist book and the Human Progress Project and things like that. And you realize things are kind of objectively getting a lot better. Poverty is plummeting. We're actually, despite the alarmism, we're actually getting better at environmentalism and all of this kind of thing. But, you know, what your mentor told you reminded me of what it was a hypnotist I was working with, just doing some self-hypnotherapy. He said one of his mentors told him, no matter how noble a cause you're getting involved in, if you're coming at it from a negative standpoint, and I think about, you know, Just Stop Oil or, you know, Extinction Rebellion people, if you're coming into it with a negative attitude, you are detracting from that ethos, from that movement, from that impulse. You're not helping things. You're actually making it worse if you're coming from the negative side of the spectrum.
100%, 100%. Something that I talk about in book 4, the Manifesting with Alignment, is the idea that if you want to go from a negative reality to a positive reality, you have to go through the neutral, right? And what people try and do is they try and constantly fight the negative reality. And so it kind of just falls under that basic premise or basic idea of what you resist persists. Mm-hmm. And so people, what they're doing is they're not accepting reality as it is. They're not coming in at it from a more positive standpoint, a neutral standpoint. What they're doing is they're trying to fight reality and get rid of it and break it down and change it and trying to control things that happen as opposed to just accepting them as they are and pivoting and focusing on what could work out. You know, so an example could be like, instead of protesting about environmental changes, why not just go to the beach and start picking up some trash? You know, it's that sort of idea of changing what you're focusing on so that you can actually start doing the changes and being the change that you want to see in the world, which is what, you know, Mahatma Gandhi once said, right? The quote, it's like, be the change that you want to see in the world. Yeah. A lot of people are not being that change. Instead, they're trying to fight what is instead of creating the changes that they want to see and experience.
Yeah. Another favorite quote of mine is Neville Goddard, right? Who differentiated between resisting evil and renouncing it. They may sound like the same thing, but he said, you know, as long as you're out there saying like, this is evil, it's got to stop. This is terrible. You're just adding energy to it. And what you have to do is put your energy into what you want, not what you don't want. And there's another writer, a little more, a little less known here in the West. You may know him, Vadim Zeland.
Vadim Zeland, yeah.
Yes. Okay. So you obviously do. You know, who talked about, you know, his framework for it was the pendulum, right? Like an energetic pendulum, which is created by mass thought. And the pendulum doesn't care if you're opposed to it or aligned with it. It just wants the energy. Pendulums want
the attention.
The Pardon
attention.
Me?
The yeah. attention.
Yeah. Right. And so nothing strikes truer than that to me, especially, you know, in the circles I run in, there's a lighthearted sort of streak through the Bitcoin world because we just call it all clown world, right? And that's kind of how we dismiss it. It's a clown car, and we'll look at these central bankers. They know how to do one thing, print money, and we make jokes about it and memes, and that's sort of like a positive coping thing. And then there are the ones who are like, the World Economic Forum wants to implement a technocracy, and they do. I mean, they come out and they say that they want this, but the solution in my mind isn't to like pick up a placard and go to Davos and say like what you're doing is wrong. It's to do your own thing. It's to chart your own course and to sort of say, yeah, you do whatever you want. And it brings us to a kind of weird juxtaposition where people like you and me and people who subscribe to this sort of philosophy say, hey, you know, the world is pretty good and you can chart your own course and we have freedom and we have latitude and we can have goals and dreams and ambitions and the room to run with them. And other people are like, everything is oppression. Everything is hierarchy. Everything is suppressing it. And both are true, right? We live in this weird quantum superimposition of both states. And you have to try and snap yourself out of the negative one and get into the positive
one. Yeah, definitely. Something that I've come to understand is the idea that all realities exist here and now, both the positive and the negative. It all exists. It's all a potential. And so the difference between someone that lives a life that they enjoy and someone that lives a life that they hate is essentially which reality that they choose to live from. And you mentioned the idea of the superpositions, right? Both realities exist. The one that perpetuates and manifests is the one that you choose to focus on, the one that you choose to put your energy and attention towards.
Now, a skeptic might be listening to us and saying, okay, like these are two clearly comfortable people having okay lives, and it's easy for them to talk about this, but I'm living in a dumpster or an alley or whatever. It's a harder argument for me because I know so many people who've come out of dumpsters and alleys and completely transformed their lives. But, you know, we got back from our vacation. It was kind of fluky how this interview came about. And it was kind of a nightmarish vacation. And I just sort of, when I realized this interview was going to happen, I flipped open to one of these books, could have been Myths of Manifesting, whatever. And it said, Myths of Manifesting. What if these negative circumstances aren't happening to you, but simply happening? And further, what if this is the best case scenario in an infinitely set of worse possible scenarios? And you know, I flipped it open and I showed it to my wife. I said, you know what, maybe this vacation wasn't so bad after all, you know, and maybe it could have been a lot worse. And after all, we flew there and back on a Boeing, and at least the doors didn't fly off in mid-flight or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then where we went from that was we suddenly, like, we had issues at the place we were staying, and then it made us really grateful for the people in our lives here back home. And just like, I know I live in Canada and I have a lot of complaints about the government and things like that. And I'm like, but you know what? It's a pretty solid base layer of societal infrastructure here that you can almost take for granted. And we do too often. So just those mindsets of like, you know, it could always be worse, which is really hard to do when things are not going well for you.
100%. I think a big part of that is comparison, right? We often like to compare our lives with the people that are closest to us, the people that surround us on a daily basis. And if we're in a community of people that live to a certain standard and we're below that standard, then we immediately start to think that our life is terrible. It's not good enough. I'm not living a good life. And we start to undermine the things that we have, the people that we know. And so it reminds me that you mentioned earlier, reminds me of this song that I listened to. This is a rap song. And it was rapped by this rapper, Big Sean. And something that he says in the song is, rock bottom is a bottomless pit. So it can always be worse. It could always be worse. And I think people need to really understand that. Like, it could really be way, way worse. And a lot of us, especially the people watching this interview right now, they probably live very, very privileged lives. I lived a very, very privileged life. Obviously, I went through my own tribulations and struggles and setbacks. But most people, I think, in the modern Western world need to understand that things can really, really be worse. And when we start to show appreciation, like you said, start being grateful for the things that we have, it allows us to kind of just rest a little bit in the reality that we're in, instead of just always trying to fight what we have and trying to always constantly achieve more, and just sitting with the acceptance that what we have is already really, really good. And in doing that, you kind of open up space so that you can start focusing and doing things in a more positive intention with a more positive light. And in doing that, actually pivot towards the things that you want to build and grow. So 100% agree with what you were saying.
Yeah, I read once in a primer to Gurdjieff, not a Gurdjieff book itself, but that, you know, gratitude was the magic balm for when you land in this negativity. And you wrote, you know, it's about choosing to be cheerful no matter the circumstances you are facing. Now, I'll admit, I have the hardest time doing that, because, you know, I can get caught in those spirals. And when you're in them, you don't want to feel better. At least I don't. You know, and someone might say, well, look, why don't you go for a walk? You'll feel better. It's like, what do you know? You know, but
it's about accepting that part of yourself as well.
Yeah.
You know, something that I talk about in the books is, you know, it's not just about accepting the outside reality, but also about accepting how that reflects internally as well. How you feel about that in the moment. You know, allowing yourself to be angry, allowing yourself to be disappointed, allowing yourself to feel a little bit of sadness every once in a while is perfectly okay. You know, accept that emotion, process it. Don't, you know, stuff it down and try and fake positivity all the time, because that also doesn't work. So it's like, you kind of just want to accept the way that things are, both externally and internally. And when you do that, you let that reality process and you start shifting into the next thing.
Yeah, it's a kind of surrender, really. Surrender. And I find, like, that's where you get to that cartoonish sort of approach to law of attraction or manifesting or whatever you want to call it, where people are almost like white knuckling it with this grin on their face. It's like, everything's fine. I'm good. It's like, no, you're about to like go on a shooting spree. Right.
Yeah.
So you have to, you feel terrible. And this was the hardest thing for me, as you know, as an alcoholic or an addict, was to feel it. Right. So, and that's why, you know, people resort to substance abuse, because they don't want to feel what they're feeling. So, you know, you were writing, surrender who you think you are, surrender to physical attachments or other people's expectations, your own assumptions, or even your own illusion of identity. Right. I try to force things when they go sideways on me. Right. And then I found some of the biggest hinge moments of my life was when I just gave up. It's like, okay, I can't control this situation anymore. And then you really have to give it up. You can't just sort of fake it. Oh, I'm going to pretend I give up, but I still really want this to happen. You really have to say, okay, if it's not in the cards, it's not in the cards, you know?
Yeah. 100%. I think there is a lot to learn when it comes to letting go. I think letting go, this is actually a topic that I talked about with a client of mine recently on a coaching call. And she asked me the question of, what's the difference between not caring at all and And this is just and not caring at all and working too hard at it. And so there needs to be that difference that, I mean, sorry, it's not caring at all and being non-attached, because there's a difference between those two things. There needs to be a balance. And I learned this from Deepak Chopra. And he basically, the way that he defines it is that detachment is being completely detached from the game. It's not playing the game of life at all. And when you do that, you're actually, what you're actually doing is you're resisting reality, right? You're trying to avoid something. You're trying to run away right. from it.
Yeah.
And so that's another thing that that we need to watch out for as well. And so what he says is you don't want to be detached to reality, because then you won't do anything to change it. You won't put any new intentions. You won't focus on anything positive. You kind of just resist and run away. And whatever you're running away from, you're giving your focus and attention. I like to use the analogy of, you know, if you're running away from a lion, what's your main focus at that moment? It's going to be the lion.
Yeah.
And so it's like you're giving it energy, and that sort of perpetuates. And so the whole idea is to be non-attached. And non-attached is a little bit differently. Non-attached is just being, is working to change your situation, working to improve, to grow, to make progress, but not being defined by outcomes. Not being defined by outcomes and focusing more on the process of growing, of developing, of improving whatever skill or process that you're trying to go through. And as you do that, and as you focus more on the progress and using that as confirmation that you're on the right path, then that's when you eventually start to attract the results. Because a lot of times people do focus on the process, but they're waiting for results. They want the results quickly. And sometimes it doesn't happen overnight, right? As we both know, it takes time sometimes. It's putting one stone on top of the next. And instead of using the end goal as the confirmation that you're the person that you say you are, or that you're on the right path, use each block that you stack one on top of the other as the confirmation. Use little bits of evidence that you find in your everyday life that you're becoming the person that you need to be to attract the goal that you want to manifest or achieve the goal that you want to achieve, essentially. And so it's just kind of narrowing down a little bit the bar of what you need as evidence to prove that you're on the right track, to prove that you are becoming the person that you say you want to become, instead of always needing these huge big wins to prove that, right? So I kind of went a little bit off tangent, but hopefully
that's fine.
That resonated.
I mean, one of the exercises that Arash taught me, and he teaches everyone who works with him, is your wins journal. And he said, like, every night, write your daily wins, even if it's like, you know, everyone in my family is sick today and I got dinner on the table, right? Like that, like everything, and still manage to do that, like just every day, at least 5 wins. And he says, imagine what you're going to feel like after a year when you've got a journal full of wins, right? Just every day.
100%.
Yeah. I'm going to talk about, we're sort of like getting into the tail half. And so just to bring it around for like my audience, the reason I really wanted to talk to you is because I'm getting ready to launch another project here called Sovereign Mind. And in my circles, not so much with like, you know, a lot of the Bitcoin people and sort of the economic contrarians, but peripheral to that or whatever, there's this whole sense of they, right? They won't let Bitcoin survive. They orchestrated the Super Bowl. They orchestrated the bridge collapse in Baltimore yesterday. Like the World Economic Forum has, you know, is going to control the world. And so I want to get the message out that even though these forces may seem like they have outsized power and influence in our lives, how do people maintain their upbeatness and stay steadfast on their own course through this sort of like what seems like a dark, oppressive zeitgeist sometimes.
Yeah, it's understanding the idea that you don't need to depend on anything external to have the life that you want. I think sometimes we put too much dependence on external factors to have the life that we want. And the perfect example of that is Bitcoin, right? Bitcoin is a great investment. I have some as well, you know, something that I've invested
in. I didn't even know that before I had you on, so.
Yeah, it's something I've invested in as well. And so I'm a big believer in Bitcoin, but that doesn't stop me from providing value to people, from developing skills, from developing myself. I kind of just have it sitting there because I have no control over whether it goes up or down. That's right. Completely outside of my control. All I can do is spread the message, spread the word, say how great of an investment it is, and sort of work on myself, work on my own businesses and my own projects, and realize that I am the creator of my reality and I don't need to depend on anything external to kind of bring that forward, right? If you put too much dependence on something to go up to become rich, then what you're essentially doing, like what Vadim Zeland calls, is you're putting all your eggs in one basket. And when you put all your eggs in one basket, you give it excess importance, right? And when you give something excess importance, you disrupt the balance of nature. And that sort of comes crashing down and leads to a lot of obstacles and challenges and roadblocks and regulations and things of that sort. And so I think the best thing that people can do for Bitcoin is to put money and attention into it, invest in it, spread the word, but go do your own thing. Let go, right? Stop giving it so much importance, because when you give something so much importance, it does what I just explained right now. Hopefully that made sense.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, for sure. I mean, one of the things you wrote is, like, you know, in a world where politicians, corporations, government officials control everything you see on the screen, it's important to filter out what doesn't serve your purpose. Only follow your path. So, I mean, when it comes to Bitcoin, everyone knows I actually managed to build almost my entire stack by just taking it as a payment method at EasyDNS since 2013 and forgetting about it. Like, that was all I did. That was my one move. My coping mechanism for dealing with, you know, these overwhelming forces is I don't believe anybody controls the world. I believe we live in an out of control world, which is comforting for me. But for some people, that's a terrifying prospect. And I think they'd rather live in an Orwellian dystopia than live in a world where nobody's in charge and nobody knows what's going to happen. But the reality is, I mean, that's kind of where it is.
100%. 100%. We can't control, like, going back to way in the beginning of the call, you mentioned the idea that we can't control reality. We can only change our response to it. And in doing that, we change reality, right?
Yeah.
So
I'll let you go in a minute. When I told my wife that I was going to do this podcast with you, she said, you know, Stephen Bartlett, Diary of a CEO guy, she says, he asked all of his guests, like, why are you doing this? Why are you doing what you do? And I said, you know what? I'll ask him that. So why are you doing this?
Yeah. So, you know, this whole path of law of attraction, personal development, writing, man, it kind of just fell on my lap. It fell on my lap. And every time I've tried to derail from it, I always get called back. I always get called back to it. And it's not because of anything in particular. It's really just because I enjoy, it brings me fulfillment. I really, really enjoy talking about these concepts. You know, when I receive emails from people telling me how much they've enjoyed the books, how much they've enjoyed the emails, I think that is something that really fuels me. And so I can't really see myself doing anything other than, you know, continuing on this path that was, like I said, fell on my lap and kind of just blew up out of proportion without me having any conscious intention initially. And so, yeah, that's essentially why I do it. And yeah, that's what it is.
I love how you said that every time you sort of deviate from this course of action, it's like you're in this magnetic, it just pulls you back in.
100%. It just pulls me back in. And so I've come to realize that this is sort of my purpose in a way. And, I might do things that are a little bit differently. I might introduce, create new projects and whatnot, but it'll all come down to this one goal that I have, which is to help people become a master of their attention, their mind, and their energy. And when we can do that, when we can create a world of people that have control over their attention, their mind, and their energy, then we can start to create a better world for everyone. And I'm a big believer in that. And so this is why I do it.
Great. Well, why don't you tell everyone how to follow you, keep track of you, get your books, and get in touch with you if you're so inclined.
Yeah, for sure. So they can check out my website. So it's mentality.com, but without the E. And you can follow me on Instagram. I've been posting a lot of new content on there. So ryu.shinohara. And my books are on Amazon as well, Ryu Shinohara. If you just type it in there, you'll find the whole series. And Mark, you can be a testament of the quality of those books. But yeah, those are the places mostly that people go to check me out.
Great. We'll put links to all that in the show notes page. And Ryu Shinohara, thanks so much for coming on. And we will, do it again someday, I'm sure.
Cool. Thank you so much, Mark, for the call.
All right. Thanks. Take care.